ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, The Dynasty of Anshuman, Text Number 31.
Sadur apapasya brunasya brahmavadinaha katham vadham yatha babror manyate sanmato bhavan.
Thus, translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. You are well we are well known and worshipped in learned circles. How dare you kill this Brahman, who is a saintly, sinless person, well versed in Vedic knowledge? Killing him would be like destroying the embryo within the womb or killing a cow. Purport. As stated in the Amarakosha dictionary, Bruno Rabaka Bala Garbhe. The word Bruna refers either to the cow or to the living entity in the embryo. According to Vedic culture, destroying the undeveloped embryo of the soul in the womb is as sinful as killing a cow or a Brahman. In the embryo, the living entity is present in an undeveloped stage. The modern scientific theory that life is a combination of chemicals is nonsense. Scientists cannot manufacture living beings, even like those born from eggs. The idea that scientists can develop a chemical situation resembling that of an egg and bring life from it is nonsensical. Their theory that a chemical combination can have life may be accepted, but these rascals cannot create such a combination. This verse refers to Bhrunasya Vadham, the killing of a Bhruna or destruction of the embryo. Here is a challenge from the Vedic literature. The crude atheistic understanding that the living entity is a combination of matter belongs to the grossest ignorance. You are well versed and worshipped in learned circles. How dare you kill this Brahman, who is a saintly, sinless person, well versed in Vedic knowledge? Killing him would be like destroying the embryo within the womb or killing of a cow. These are words spoken by the Brahmani who is trying to protect her husband from being devoured by Saudasha, who has been unknowingly cursed by Vasishtha Muni to become from a king of the world into a man-eating Rakshasa. So here, that is the reference to context of this verse. So here the wife is saying that by killing this Brahmana, it's a very, very serious, grievous offense. And Prabhupada is here in the purport very nicely talking about the important sinful reactions, sinful activities which this world sort of undertakes in a very nonchalant manner. Prabhupada is referring here to the killing of the embryo in the womb and killing of the cow. Now, why did this killing really take place? This question can be asked. Why do people in this world, why do nice people, loving mothers, why do they kill their children in their womb? Where did this idea of hell come from? that if you have a pregnancy at an unwanted time, in an unplanned manner, out of some accident or whatever, then if it is not suiting your particular scheme of things, and it is sort of a disturbance in the way you have planned out your life, then of course go ahead and drop the child. Just go to any doctor and they will do the needful, give some pills or injections or some curating will be done and the baby will be out. Where does this entire situation, which has led to such voluminous proportions of sinful burden of this world, come from? How many embryos are being killed every day in the womb? I don't believe anybody would have any statistics actually, because so much of this is hidden. So even the official statistics would be very astounding for anyone to even think about. We are living in a world where murder is commonplace. Some terrorist may have killed a few thousand people in a hotel, and he, you know, maybe he should be hanged or whatever else, you know, that's one thing. But, and that may go into a big limelight of newspapers and world news and etc. But what happens under the carpet? What happens actually sometimes even for us in a day-to-day basis is not few people being killed by a machine gun, but by people willingly, millions of children being killed every day. So what is the total score of children aborted in history? Since the history of modern science has come in and we can do all these things, the figure would be something which would be make us become unconscious practically. Millions upon millions of children have been killed. Where does all this demoniac tendency stem from? As Prabhupada says very clearly, it stems from the grossest ignorance that man is a product of chemicals. This is where the whole demoniac thing comes from. This is the basis, the foundation of sinful life of the atheistic demons. To propagate very loudly and clearly, using science as a... Because science is a very powerful module, it's a very powerful platform to speak anything you want. You speak from the apparently religious platform, then you are considered as fanatical. But you just take a little bit of a scientific stance and speak from that platform, then everything becomes not just truth, but absolute truth. So using that paradigm, that particular advantage, they are loudly proclaiming that there is that man or all creation is just a result of a combination of chemicals. And Prabhupada is one of the most powerful personalities which you can see, who in modern times has led a war practically to defeat this atheistic theory. Because Prabhupada could understand that what to talk of Radha Krishna Leela is a very high subject, which even the Paramahamsas would be able to understand only. But way that is a subject for something which is a very exalted subject for even just a very small fragment of human civilization can get into that subject. If you consider 6.5 billion people in the world, how many people can understand Radha Krishna Leela? You can about count from the fingers practically. But to reach that point of understanding Radha and Krishna, first you have to demolish first the restrictive theory. Because as long as people are going to believe that we are product of chemicals, there is no question of understanding consciousness. There is no question of understanding consciousness. What to talk of understanding supreme consciousness. Right? So first, even the level of consciousness acceptance that there is a spirit soul, there's a conscious living being, a tiny particle, fragmental portion of the supreme whole is residing within your body. To understand that first would be the first step towards supreme consciousness. So Prabhupada could understand this very clearly, and therefore Prabhupada said that the purpose of ISKCON was to, he said twofold. of the proper ISKCON is to give love of God. That's the highest purpose of ISKCON, highest purpose of our movement. But in order to achieve that, in order to achieve this lofty goal of giving people love of God, there will be two other things to be done. One is to destroy atheistic science, number one, and number two, to destroy false godmen. And Prabhupada was very clear about, he could diagnose the problem. He was a spiritual scientist. He could diagnose, where is the world going wrong? What's going wrong in this world? Most people don't even know what's going wrong in the world. They have no idea. It looks like everything is going wrong, but what really is going wrong? What really is making everything go wrong? Prabhupada could understand this for two reasons. These people are being guided by atheistic scientists who are propagating that this body is a product of chemicals. And then there are those guys who are not product, who are not sort of succumbing to that. They understand there is a consciousness, there isn't a soul, and there's a God like that. And then there are the other group of people, other maybe 50%, whatever they are. But they are under the care of the guys who are leading them through, being guided through false godmen. So where does the world really land up with? The atheists are going to the scientist, and those who are theists are going under the false godmen. And what is left? Nothing is left. Finished. The whole civilization is finished. So unless these two powerful forces are destroyed first, then we can create a revolution in the life of this misdirected civilization. That was Prabhupada's understanding. So Prabhupada is, whenever he gets a chance, now when he met Swarup Damodar Goswami Maharaj for the first time, Damodar Prabhu, now he happened to come from Manipur. When Prabhupada met him for the first time, of course he was that time studying his PhD in chemistry in, I think, Illinois. When Prabhupada met him, and he knew that this is a, you know, Vaishnava backgrounded person coming from India, from the exalted place of Manipur, where it is the state in our country where Vaishnava flourished for several years. Why? Because the kings are all Vaishnavas there. Vaishnava kings. And of course, the background history is that, you know, Arjuna's one of the wives was from Manipur. Babruvahan was born, and then the whole lineage comes from there. So the genealogical or seminal descendants of Babruvahan, who was a great devotee of the Lord, are all coming from Manipur. And the second generation Gaudiya Vaishnavas after Lord Chaitanya, they went to Manipur also and preached. So for, and of course in recent times, there's a great king called Bhagyachandra, one of the last Rajarishis of this world. Our country was governed by kings. And even up to, we have people like in Barsana, we know, go to Barsana Dham. And then you have this king who, you know, that particular palace is there, we all know, before the Sriji Mandir comes in. Even up to the, you know, this is about 1850 or something, that king. He just installed a big palace with the center as Radha Krishna and all ministers sitting on the sides. So we have a glorious history of personalities like Bhagyachandra, who were actually shown by the Lord himself in a divine mystical way, in a vision at night, as to install the entire culture of Manipuri culture of dance and music and Rasa Leela. Anyway, so that's the background. The point is that the moment Prabhupada saw that this person is from that background, Damodar, he immediately entrusted him to this thing. So you are a scientific person. You have to really go ahead and conduct conferences and prove to the scientists that there is a consciousness. Right? So that's the origin of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And Prabhupada handed a very large chunk of responsibility on this person. Now, you know, to understand the value of this person, Swarup Damodar Goswami Maharaj, in our movement is very important. Now, this person has gone to in the spiritual sky, is in the Nitya Leela of the Lord. But it is important that we, as followers of this glorious movement, never forget at any point of time those pioneers who have really made inroads into preaching Krishna consciousness in this world. Right? So these are the pioneers. These are the people who are actually Prabhupada's associates from the spiritual sky who came with him. And now when the Lord wants, they go back. So, the type of concessions Prabhupada made for this person are very glorious to note. Any amount of money, Prabhupada was a very, you can say in that sense, Krishna conscious chingu. Very chingu about money, you know, very sticky. He was he was very sticky about the money he would use, and therefore the first lesson taught to a hippie, our dear Shamsundar Prabhu, invited by the Hetashbari first time, you know, in that place. He said, you came to the temple back, and first thing he taught me was how to make, you know, make a balance sheet, how much has come in and how much has gone out, right? A hippie is being taught by Prabhupada. Prabhupada was a businessman, you know, he knew intricate accountancy. But, you know, kitna aya, kitna gaya, the first thing was taught by him to him, right? So Prabhupada was very, very sticky about money. But when it comes to Sripad Maharaj, any amount of money he needed for his conferences, BBT would have to sanction. It's a blanket instruction. That this department would not have to do any fundraising. No fundraising. You just take and do conferences. Just take and do conferences. And Prabhupada would do conferences every month all over the world. Right? Less known fact about Prabhupada's life. Even in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was on his mortal deathbed. Even the Prabhupada left his world on 14 November 1977. But even up to about, I think, August and September, Prabhupada told Sripad Maharaj to have conferences in Vrindavan on science. Less known fact. And even from his sickly bed, without any food or water, Prabhupada would, you know, even in the interval time, when there was a conference where there was a lunch time for the scientists to eat food, prasad, Prabhupada would phone up, how many have come? What's really happening? What are the proceedings going on? And then Sripad Maharaj would come to Prabhupada's bedside in the evening. And Prabhupada would be like completely finished, no energy to do anything, can't turn over practically, there's no energy whatsoever, all skin and bones. And then he would sit next to him and he would give him a report. Now somebody said that Prabhupada wants only kirtan now. He doesn't want to do all this, you know, talk. Prabhupada shut that devotee saying, this is kirtan. Kirtan is not just Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Anything which glorifies Krishna is kirtan. And this particular scientific conference is only for glorifying Krishna. Right? So in this way we can see that Prabhupada has given deep importance. Because this world, whether we like it or not, is being governed by the scientific circles, the scientists. Many of them are atheistic. Most of them are demoniac. Demoniac. So, this is something which Prabhupada really wanted, and it's really wonderful that so many of our devotees, brahmacharis from our temple and other places in ISKCON, are really, you know, sort of talking to the scientific circles, the students, professors, and making them understand there is more to life than just these chemicals. Because try to understand the complexity of this world. The science, when you have a paradigm which says that man is matter, then the whole focus of science is to just unravel the mysteries of matter. And then when you understand that there is man is not matter, that man, or rather all life, is spirit, then the whole focus of research would go on understanding what is spirit. So how much money, hard-earned money of the taxpayers or government money or whatever you call it, how much of money is spent only on the research on understanding matter? And matter is so complex, it's an incredibly complex thing. Each cell is unbelievable when you come think of the complexity. Each DNA molecule, a double helix, as found out by Watson and Crick, 1958. So each helix of the DNA is so complex, right? And this all from amino acids. The basic science, all of us know amino acids. There are 20 amino acids in the body. Now the complexity is that how many combinations are possible of those 20 amino acids? Permutation of combination of to make one cell. The scientists say that 2.5 raised to 10 raised to 17 are the complex probabilities of mixing these amino acids. Right? And among all these bizarre 10 to 17 probabilities, there has to be a divine intelligence who knows exactly what combination really works to make it into a cell. Right? If we just combine these random molecules, just, you know, to put them together, what is the probability? There is a 1 in 10 to 17 chance. This equation, what it means in scientific circles, means that there is one chance in 10 to 17 combinations that you will give the right combination. Right? So who is that person deciding that this is the combination which really works for the cell? Watson and Crick is deciding that? No. There has to be a God. Now it is so damn simple. Huh? Even atheistic scientists can see God in the laboratory. We don't need to see God in the temple alone. Krishna does not reside in the temple alone. He resides in a very powerful way in the temple. Definitely, because he is invoked there by his pure devotee to come. But even the scientists can understand, because God is everywhere, of course, we sarvavyapi, he's omnipresent, that even when such a complex thing is there in the laboratory, you can see yes. So many scientists understand this now. They're doing cloning and all this sort of thing are going on. Understanding genome of the genome. The genome is the combination of, you know, all the DNA molecules in the body. So they have figured out that the simplest genome, the simplest blueprint of a particular cell, a bacteria, contains 600,000 DNA particles. Simple bacteria. Okay. So one, try to understand the complexity of Krishna's creation. Even as devotees, sometimes we take Krishna for granted. Oh, Krishna, everybody is playing his flute, fifth note and all that. But try to understand Krishna's tremendous intelligence. What is the intelligence of Krishna? Of course, that is manifested by Brahma, but it is Krishna's intelligence given to Brahma. That if you have a 1 in 10 to 17 probability of making a particular combination of a cell, right? So that is replicated 3.1 billion times to make the whole human body. That's the amount of genome particle available in the human body. 3.1 billion. That is Krishna. That is Krishna. So, this is just at the microscopic level of complexity, right? This is just at the cellular level, right? There's one cell, so much complexity there. Then if you just expand Krishna's creation to look at the macroscopic level, you go on the, you know, big size, you see outside, then you look at the stars, oof. And then again, the same astounding. What astounds the the genetic scientist and the biophysicist is, you know, the same thing when they see on the microscope level as astronomers. The same thing. It is just small and this in the bigger version. You see the complexities of this world outside through the telescope. Again, it's astounding creation. A small, infinitesimal small brain looking at this huge thing. Now, how much is the expanse of that universe? What is the expanse of the universe which the scientists can understand? Now we have light years. They calculate distance in light. Now we have distance in inches, meters, kilometers, like that. So then that's not possible to understand, you know, cosmic space through rulers and kilometers like that, right? So cosmic distance is calculated through light years, correct? So what is light years? It is the amount of time taken for light to travel in 1 second. How much is that, Baldev? 3 into 10 raised to 8. Okay. 3 into 10 raised to 8. Most of the devotees have forgotten their science by now. Right? But we should remember something of this, because, you know, we should know avidya and vidya together, Ishvara Parishad says. So some avidya is good to know. So yes, so light travels 3.3 into 10 raised to 8 meters. Meters, not kilometers, meters. 10 raised to 6 meters per in second. In 1 second, light, you just shoot light at one, you just open the torch. In 1 second, it would have traveled so many thousands upon thousands of miles. Now, they say that the cosmic distances which they see on telescope are equivalent to trillions of light years. One second takes so much distance, 10 seconds, 100 seconds, 1 minute, you know, five hours, 10 hours. They have calculated distances between two cosmic galaxies where light would travel from one galaxy to another galaxy and would take trillions of years to travel that distance. Now that's what is being seen. And all this has come from where? From the Big Bang. Haribo. All this infinitely unbelievable creation of Krishna has come, according to our scientist friends, from a point of singularity of zero dot. It's come from a dot. How can anyone believe this? How can anyone believe this? So it was so natural for somebody who has any common sense, that this cannot come from there. And what talk of the Big Bang? Prabhupada used to say very simply, from bangs, the example which they gave in the beginning, I remember, it's like going to a library, of not this library which we have in our here, 5,000 books here, but you go to a huge library, Asiatic library, whatever else, huge libraries where they have got millions of books. So there's a big blast there. Some terrorist comes and perhaps puts a bomb there. Then after you go, the aftermath of the blast, you go and see all the books are all aligned properly into a huge one volume set. Everything is properly aligned. Everything all comes together. Right? They all are in different showcases and here and there. Everything comes together as one beautiful, nice thing. That's what it means to have a Big Bang. Right? That means to create this in beautiful variety of flowers and fruits and everything else around has come from a Big Bang. Radhana Swami Maharaj gave a very simple understanding of that there has to be a God. I said, okay, and even in the atheistic people would have to believe this. Maharaj said once that even the astronomers and astrophysicists, they calculate cosmic events. They can tell when the solar eclipse can take place, right? They can tell when lunar eclipse can take place, or what they have taken place in the past and the future, right? That means, why is that possible? Because sun or all cosmic bodies, they are moving a particular type of speed, correct? Everything in the heavens moves. Nothing is static. All the planets move. Even the sun moves. And everyone accepts that. So, the fact that they move in a controlled manner, right? If the uncontrolled movement, then what would happen? Then you can't calculate. The fact that you can calculate something is that there will be a Uttarayan year at this time. There will be a Dakshinayan year. There will be a solar eclipse year. There will be a this year. The fact that we can tell, even our astrologers, they also, same thing. The fact that they can predict a particular type of event which will take place out of so many days means there has to be a controlled movement of the particular heavenly body. Correct? The fact that some heavenly body is moving and can tell, okay, there will be a solar eclipse in 2011 on March 3rd. Right? And it will happen. If they say it, it will happen. The fact that you can say that, the sun movements are controlled. The obvious question is, who is controlling the sun movements? Right? This is totally atheistic thing. That they can predict events based on science. But then the simple question has to be asked to these people that if this is what you can predict, then please tell us who is controlling the sun's movement. Because always control would lead to object question of there being a controller. So even from the most atheistic paradigm, there is no question there has to be a God. Forget about all these 3.1 billion genomic particles of the human body. Even if you just forget that, the fact that you can tell that there is going to be a panchang, there is going to be a Amavasya or Purnima, means everything is controlled. Very simple. And there has to be a controller who can say after 15 days there will be Amavasya, after 30 days there will be a Purnima, and then there will be blah, blah. Control. Very simple. So, Prabhupada was so powerful in his understanding that he based his movement itself with that word consciousness. That's very, very wonderful. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, there and there itself, Prabhupada has established there is a consciousness, first of all. There's no question of no consciousness. There is a consciousness. But on other hand, now let's try and see in the next few minutes, you know, the bizarre amount of information, of course, on one hand, which is there on material science, they can create this. You know, they've understood now. They've understood the blueprint of the human body. 2003, the project was over. The blueprint of the human body is known. They have figured out this 3.1 billion combinations. They have figured it out. They know it. But then, when somebody understands that we are not matter, but we are spirit, then the whole focus of research was understanding spiritual phenomena, right? And there comes our acharyas. They are those personalities who have completely rejected this idiotic idea that we are matter, and they understand that it is a spirit, and they fine-tune their consciousness in such a way, just like a microscope or a telescope can fine-tune to understand even the most. They can see the DNA these days. DNA you can see. They can see through the microscope. Electron microscope, they can see the DNA also, replicating and all that. Right? So you fine-tune your instrument to such an extent that you can see the finest of events taking place at the biological, molecular level. But on the other hand, if you have a scientist like an acharya, who is so powerful, try to see our acharyas in a scientific way now, that they can fine-tune this, not body, but what they are. What we are? We are consciousness. They can fine-tune their consciousness to such an extent that they can observe the movements of consciousness. That means they are talking about phenomena way beyond matter. Right? Is it not? Way beyond matter. Because consciousness is not perceived by matter. It is not perceived by the telescope or a microscope. Right? So their level of accuracy, their level of cognitions is so super fine that they can decipher the consciousness of a person. When Giriraj Maharaj walks up to Prabhupada, for the first time, that time he was not Giriraj Maharaj, of course, he was a student in Boston somewhere, a seeker, and Prabhupada sees this person for the first time in his life, and that means the program, you know, remember Giriraj Maharaj explained to us when he was here, a few months back, about that, how he entered into Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada looks at him and says, so you want to be God, or you want to be a servant of God? And what did Giriraj Maharaj feel? That here is a person who has seen me, and his vision is going through me, through the road I have walked, right over to my hostel, and through my hostel there is a bathroom in my room, and in that room there is a bathroom door which says, I am God. So he is seeing me and understands that actually I am a guy who has come here to become God. So before he even gets into a conversation with me, he's asked, you are come here to become God or to become servant of God? If you want to become God, then this is not a place for you. Servant of God, you stay here for hours together. When Radhanath Maharaj, when Srila Prabhupada, his divine grace, was walking out of Vrindavan, 1972, when they had gone for this tour in Vrindavan, right, remember? Maharaj talks about it. And then all the people were telling Radhanath Maharaj that, you know, you should, and they could see he's a very special soul. They could see, he's having the long hair and all that. But still, he could see he's very special. At that point of time, Prabhupada didn't have a personal servant. So these Prabhupada disciples offered Radhanath Maharaj to actually become Prabhupada's personal servant and travel along with him all over the world. And Maharaj has just discovered the love of his heart in Vrindavan. He just discovered the glory of the land of Vraj. And he was completely settled down to stay here for the rest of his life. That's it. This is my eternal home now. My long search has ended. So there is no question of Maharaj wanting to leave now before he can fully relish the bliss of his heart and discovering the land of his love. Right? So then Prabhupada is leaving. All the devotees are there, and Prabhupada himself criticizes, you are, you know, this, you are that, and all. You are in Maya, you are getting a chance to go with the acharya all over the world, and you are really putting him down so bad. And Maharaj, this is what I am. I just naturally love this place. I want to stay here, and I love Prabhupada, of course. But at this point of time, I don't think I am ready for that sort of service. And then Maharaj and Prabhupada was walking out, and then Maharaj bowed down to him. And we remember Maharaj's words, right? And Maharaj says that, Prabhupada glanced at me, and his glance touched my soul. His glance touched my soul. That means Prabhupada would understand what are the movements of this person's consciousness. Huh? And Prabhupada said only one line. Vrindavan. So he said, you like to be here? Prabhupada just scratched his hair, right? Lovingly like a father. And Maharaj said, yes, I like it. Prabhupada said, Vrindavan is such a nice place. You stay here. And he walked out. Huh? Prabhupada could understand the consciousness of this person who was bowing down to him. Right? And we find there are so many examples of people who have come to Prabhupada and Prabhupada could understand immediately by just seeing them, huh? what is the state of their consciousness. And the answer was given. And there are so many. We hear from Gaurang Prabhu all the time. We hear from Gaur Gopal Prabhu. And all these our brahmacharis went to Prabhupada Lila. You know, they know all these things. So we hear from them. Prabhupada immediately able to see a person and give the answer exactly necessary to suit his consciousness and understanding his frame of mind at the time. Right? How is this possible? How can a person answer everyone? Prabhupada has asked so many times the same question and Prabhupada has given different answers. Right? We know that. Same question asked, you know, why this one? Different answers. Why? Depending on the person, Prabhupada's answers are not stereotype. Nothing in spiritual life is stereotype. Nothing. Because it does not matter. Matter is stereotype. Replicating DNA. With so many copies, like Xerox. But nothing in spiritual life is static. It's always dynamic. So Prabhupada's answers also are always dynamically different from the previous one. Based on what the person needs to hear. Now, when you expand that understanding of Prabhupada and take it to an acharya of the level of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And of course, many of them are there. I'm just quoting one of them. And see the scientific glory of their consciousness, that their cognizance of spiritual phenomena is so accurate that they can understand why a particular hair, a flower, is falling from the head of Yashoda Mai. Imagine, just imagine the glory of this personality. A particular flower has fallen from the head of Yashoda Mai when she is chasing Krishna in the Damodar Leela. And Acharya can understand what that flower is thinking at that time. The flower is thinking that I don't want to be a party to this particular event. Madhurasa is trying to bind Krishna. And I don't want to be a party to this particular event of binding Krishna because Krishna is my Lord. There is only Yashoda's prerogative to bind Krishna. I'm a flower. I'm supposed to be serving. So I don't want to be a part of this particular event. So let me drop off. That's the first type of thinking. And another thinking the flower also had was that I'm adding some weight. I have some weight and it is making Yashoda's running towards Krishna a little difficult. Let me drop off. So Yashoda is more a little lighter to run. Try to appreciate when we hear the Leela. We hear it and say, very nice, very wonderful. But I'm trying to just see the same Leela from a different perspective. From the gross perspective of a scientific person and a super fine scientist like Chakravarti Thakur, who's able to understand even the movements of the teeth of Krishna. Because he has cleansed his teeth like this. He says, yes, now. The white teeth are compressing the red lips. Sattvagun has compressed Rajagun. Wow! That's fantastic. Sattvagun is prevailing now and Rajagun is compressed, is suppressed. This is the glory of a superhuman, paramhamsa, spiritual scientist. Right? Who can understand the most intricate leela which took place so many years ago. Now, it is not that, you know, In terms of time, it is not happening in real time right now. But since spiritual phenomena are eternal, Nitya Leela, so he can tune himself into particular Leela as he desires. Like you put a guided wire into the heart, you know, you can take a wire and put it from the femoral artery and go into the heart and then do some angioplasty there. You can cannulate any organ. You can cannulate the brain, you can cannulate the kidney. The wire can go anywhere you want, depending on what your organ of investigation is. Similarly, an acharya can put the wire of his consciousness to such an extent where he can actually cannulate any leela. He wants to go into a leela of understanding Govardhan leela. Okay? So you can just fine tune and go into the Govardhan Leela and understand all the micro events taking place there. Huh? And give a commentary on the Govardhan Leela. A beautiful commentary on the Govardhan Leela. What is Krishna thinking? When we see in Adi Leela, you know, Adi Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is giving us the understanding of what is Krishna thinking when he went back to Godhead after doing his Leela. Right? Is it not? When Kaviraj Goswami is trying to explain to us the descent of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he is explaining us the events taking place in Krishna's mind. Now, what to talk of a scientist looking at the DNA and look at the power of this personality? He can enter not into a cell, but into Krishna's mind. Wow, that's something supernaturally beautiful. Huh? Enter Krishna's mind and understand what is Krishna thinking right now. Krishna thinking, all love for me, which is imbued with awe and reverence, makes love weak. You know, so I would like to experience a type of love which is free from the, you know, the walls created by awe and reverence, and give the world an experience of love without awe and reverence in an element of being completely intimate. Right? So I will go to distribute that type of love to this world. Because love becomes weakened by the sort of admixture of awe and reverence. Right? So when Mahaprabhu comes to this world, he gives a type of love of the Brijbasi which has got absolutely zero awe and zero reverence for Krishna. There is no reverence for Krishna, there is no awe for Krishna, it is just he is our friend. And I want to fight with him. You know, steal from his hand and eat it. Right? So this is a type of beautiful what we have. What we have as devotees is so infinitely great than whatever any scientist can understand. To the page of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the most scientific spiritual literature existing in this planet. Right? Given by Shukdev Goswami, given by Vyasadeva. We have access to type of science, the spiritual science of consciousness. And we are hoping that through this chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is the scientific method of this age. This is the medicine, this is the remedy that you can eliminate all the layers of Prabhupada's gross ignorance, which is keeping us away from Krishna. These layers and layers and layers of dark clouds which are covering our consciousness can be broken to pieces, can be penetrated. Any amount of ignorance can be penetrated by the power of not a laser. A laser can penetrate, right? Laser can penetrate any organ and burn it. So also this is like a, you know, sort of a spiritual laser which can penetrate even the grossest consciousness and actually purify you to such an extent that you can even touch with the Supreme Consciousness. That is Krishna. The Mahamantra is that means, that profound, powerful scientific process to destroy layers of tamagun, layers of rajagun, layers of sattvagun, covering our consciousness to such an extent and making us completely away from Krishna, the goal of our life, and unravel the lost love of our heart and bring it to the forefront and get in touch with Krishna. So we are also those type of practitioners of a spiritual science, that every day in this laboratory of the temple or of course in our homes, this is like a laboratory in one sense. I'm talking today scientific jargon deliberately, because Prabhupada is talking about science here, so I'm using that paradigm to speak scientifically. That this temple or our home or a deity room is also a laboratory where we're applying the particular modality of sound, shabda, to purify our consciousness. Just like we can purify, you know, extract things, purified, you know, science can also purify things and extract small particles from the body. So we're also purifying. All that is covering the soul. Purify, 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 and then allow the soul in its pure state to manifest. manifest fully. And when they manifest fully, a lotus has blossomed. And it shines with Krishna Prem, love for Krishna. So how much we want to get focused, how much we want to really become focused on this chanting. Because it's our only hope, it's our only means to get in touch with Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.